Oftentimes, it's better to start with creativity to help you learn the facts.
Life is too short to learn a list of 1,000 rando words.
From the campus of Stanford University, this is Schools In with your hosts, Dan Schwartz and Denise Pope.
Welcome to Schools In. I am Denise Pope, senior lecturer with the Graduate School of Education here at Stanford, and I am with my co-host, Dan Schwartz, who is the dean of the Graduate School of Education.
Hello, Denise, curricular specialist Pope.
Oh, I like that title, Dan.
Anything that has the word special in it is a good title.
I like being special.
No, I've always wanted to be like special executive professor.
Yeah, that's
secretary.
Like special agent.
Special agent would be good, too.
Yeah.
So the reason I'm calling you curricular specialist is I have a curriculum challenge. And I know you teach the beloved curriculum course at Stanford. No, it is beloved.
Okay, nice.
So I teach the intro stats course for the PhD students. I sort of figured out how to do it, and it's a way for me to meet most of the students. But I've decided I'd like to teach a data literacy course. And so you're a curriculum specialist. How should I go about this? What's step one?
Well, step one is, what the heck do you mean by data literacy, right? More for me maybe than for you, but you do have to kind of figure out that definition before we figure out the curriculum.
Okay, so I want people to be able to read displays of data and just understand what's there. I'm not going to take on the reasoning, like, does this data support this claim? I just want them to be able to look at a graph and know what it's saying.
Okay. All right. So the first thing I would say in designing a curriculum is, what are the big ideas you want to get across?
No, I disagree.
Okay. Dan, it's not like a disagree or agree kind of thing.
Sorry. Was that the bad? No, I think I want to give them attack strategies for graphs. So like in reading, you have attack strategies to decode words.
Okay. That's fine. So you're making a narrow claim about what you want to teach in this curriculum. It's way easier to assess that narrow claim.
Okay, so I'm okay.
You're okay. You want them to know how to read a graph. You're going to teach them how to read a graph, and then to assess it, you're going to have them read a graph.
Wow. Class is done. So I want to teach them the strategy. I do this a lot in class. You get a complicated graph, and you sort of get overwhelmed by it. So I want to teach them the strategy of looking at one data point and understanding, oh, this is the average of boys from the ages of 5 to 6. It's the average of their weight, something
okay.
like that.
Okay.
So a good attack strategy is, make sure you understand one data point before you look at trends and things like that.
That is a very good attack strategy.
Okay. So am I done?
No. Curriculum, there's three questions that we ask in curriculum. Why? What's the purpose of this? What are you trying to do?
Oh.
Well, no, don't say it like that.
I mean, am I answering the question of why do people need to be data literate? Or am I just asking local question?
In your head, this is a really important skill to teach, that you would rather teach this than other skills. You've made that claim by saying you want to make a curriculum about it. Are you cool with that?
No, just add it on to all their other classes.
Okay.
I don't want to squeeze out art for data literacy.
Okay, all right. So this is just a unit that you think people need to know. I would argue, and you know I'm more of a qualitative data person than a quantitative data person, that people do need to understand data, and they do need to understand graphs. Even if you're not a scientist, you're going to be looking in the election. We look at graphs on polls all the time. Nobody understands what that means. You know, they.
You're just setting me up to ask you what the margin of error is.
Oh God, Dan, don't be testing me on things like that.
Okay.
But we're lucky because we happen to have an expert here. Not that you're not an expert, Dan. Okay.
I'm not an expert in data literacy. I actually want to find out what kinds of things we're aiming for. Are we helping people be consumers or scientists or decision makers?
Right. You know? Right. But I think if you're going to teach about data literacy, I think it's fair to assume that we see data all the time, quantitative and qualitative, in our lives, and it would behoove us to teach people to understand it.
As I said to you, when I look at you, you're just data to me.
Yeah, see, that does not make me happy. What does that mean? Like, you see ones and zeros on my face?
No, you're just, my perceptual system is taking all the information that's coming to my vision and saying, that's a face.
Okay, Dan, you're weirding out on me.
Is that okay?
Let's bring in Victor. We are so happy you're here. Victor Lee is a professor at Stanford Graduate School of Education, and through his research, he tries to understand new opportunities for people of all ages to learn about data sciences. And it seems like we need some help from you, Victor. So is my face data? No, I'm just kidding.
You look like data to me.
Oh, God.
You look like zeros and ones to me.
It's two against one here. Okay, first, let's just do a definition. What is data literacy? What does that mean to you?
Data literacy is the ability to interpret and communicate over data. So it'd be like seeing something like poll numbers and understanding what those mean. It'd be looking at graphs, like Dan had said, and being able to interpret trends and recognize patterns. Pattern, seeing something in a report and seeing if there's an upward slope to that or a downward one and what sorts of inferences you can make about that.
And are most people not good at doing those tasks? Is that what you're finding?
A surprising number of people struggle with it even into adulthood. So graphical skills and reading data and trying to make inferences based on those. So being able to figure out that some poll number is saying someone is 2 points ahead, but the margin of error is plus or minus three. Actually trying to digest that and make sense of that is something that we're not great at. And the news organizations sort of exploit that.
Okay. Is everyone okay if we just take that example? Because I think it's a really good example. The margin of error, if someone's 2 points ahead, the margin of error is plus or minus three. Victor, how would you explain that to a poor consumer who doesn't know what that means and the news article is not understanding that? Dan wants to do this.
So what's the poll number?
The 52%. The guy in the poll is...
52%. And the margin of error is from 49% to 55%?
No, they don't say that. They just say the margin of error is plus or minus three. That's usually what they say in these polls.
Right. So you add three and you subtract three from the actual poll value.
Okay.
And what that's saying is if you took this poll 100 times, 95 out of 100, you would get a value within that boundary, three above and three below.
Victor?
I agree.
But this doesn't feel like data literacy. This feels like statistics. I mean, how do I split those two out?
Oh, that's a good question.
That's an interesting question nowadays, especially because with data science, those are starting to come together. With statistical literacy, you're thinking about trying to understand the statistical concepts, trying to make sorts of inferences, comparing distributions, making a population sample inference. So trying to figure out, does this drug work for the population at large? Data literacy is starting to swallow that because of the interest in data science. So I think you'd be looking at things of how to interpret data representations, but also thinking about things like, is it sensible to talk about the mean income in the United States versus the median income in the United States? And what are the implications of that? We could have some very wealthy people who are skewing the distribution and making it look like, you know, the mean income's great when actually the median income is not as great for the average American.
The median is the middle point.
Dan?
Sorry. I didn't mean to look at you when I said that.
Assuming I don't know what the median is, but fair. Good for our listeners. This is Schools In with Denise Pope and Dan Schwartz. We're talking with Victor Lee, and it seems like we're doing a little bit of Stats 101 today, but really we're talking about data literacy. And I think it's really important what you just said, Victor, that most people don't understand. To me, it's I don't want to be manipulated by numbers, and some people are scared of numbers, and some people just put all their faith in whatever the particular organization that's trying to get those numbers out has to say. And you are giving us some tools to not be taken for a ride. Is that fair?
Yeah, and beyond that, data literacy is expanding to some other concerns. So one is, how trustworthy is the data that you're getting? Is it measuring the thing that you think it's supposed to be about? Is there bias built into the data collection that has affected what those data can ultimately say? So are they sampling the appropriate respondents for a poll? Another aspect of data literacy that we should be concerned about now, especially with the data trails that we're creating, is what's happening with our data, where is it going, and what's it being used for? And so that's another aspect of data literacy that we should be concerned about nowadays.
Well, that's interesting. That's a more encompassing definition.
Yeah, it's going beyond just being able to read it, but also thinking about how it's getting used.
Right, where it comes from. So... data are pretty dry. How do you make it interesting to kids? When I look at you, you're not dry data.
Oh my
you're
God, very, I'm a one, a zero, and now I'm dry.
I knew that was going to happen.
This is like pick on Denise. All right, go ahead.
Well, I think a lot of the ways that schools are currently using data is indeed pretty dry. You're finding these decontextualized situations where they give you this list of numbers that's like the heights of various animals or the wait times at various carnival rides. And it's sort of arbitrary in this made-up world that, you know, hopefully is appealing because it involves carnivals or involves animals, and that's supposed to be enough of a connection. What we've found, though, through the research is the better way to make a connection is to situate things in students' lives and things that they already find meaningful. What is it that they're already somewhat expert on, that they have a lot to say about, and that they would find interesting insights if they could actually go and dig into that data?
Okay, that's super cool. Do you have an example of how you would do that? I think teachers listening would want to hear, okay, I'm game for that. How do I do it?
Well, one of the things that I've done over the past few years is actually start using wearable technologies, specifically wearable activity trackers. So keep this in mind if you're doing some of your holiday shopping and you're going to be looking at getting activity trackers for your kids. They might find some statistical use for those.
Now he's doing commercials for us. I just think that's so funny.
So activity trackers are things like Fitbit.
Fitbit, Garmin, there's VivoFit, so various other products and devices that are out there coming in at a range of $50 to $100. But what we do is we have students wearing those devices during the school day, and they're able to get access to that data and start to analyze, say, when was the most active period of class? How much more active was that period compared to the others? Is PE about the same every day of the week, or does it vary from time to time? Perhaps they might want to compare against the boys versus the girls, and are the activities that they tend to do highly different. But these are situations where the students know a lot because it's part of their school day activity and their school day routines. And so they're the experts on it, but they can find some interesting surprises and insights when they actually start looking at the data that's pulled together from their own day and from their classmates' days.
So do you think that the interest factor is from the fact that they're wearing this cool piece of technology, or you think the interest factor is, this is about me, this is about like how many steps I took, and that's what gets them engaged?
I think there's definitely appeal to trying out some of the new technology, but that wears out after some time. What's sort of enduring is being able to say something about me and to situate my data with what's being publicly shared or what's being examined, to find some sort of new trend and being able to make some sort of claim based on that, where we might say, you know, the recess activity I do is pretty strenuous. And that's a really nice finding that one can make, just as much as we get really excited about insights that we take from BuzzFeed quizzes. Finding some new discovery about yourself is pretty rewarding and motivating in and of itself.
See, I'm looking at Dan and I'm thinking, you would make this competitive. You would be like, okay, Dan and Denise are wearing Fitbits and who's faster?
So I wear one that tracks my heart rate when I'm sleeping.
While you're sleeping?
Yeah. So I check it and I actually find it fascinating. I would like to see what I look like compared to you.
I know. See, that's the competitor in you.
Only because I think I'd win.
Hello. My point exactly. This is Schools In with Denise Pope and Dan Schwartz. We're speaking with Victor Lee here about data literacy and how you get kids excited and interested in learning about data of all kinds.
So there's been a movement to bring more statistical concepts earlier and throughout the curriculum. You know, so younger kids are dealing with probability. How's data literacy going to show up? Will there be a class on it, or do you think it'll be inserted into the science curriculum, into the math curriculum, social studies?
I think it's going to be infused in all areas, just like we're seeing data science appearing in all these different areas, that it's sort of this larger umbrella, but we're starting to talk more seriously about how does one use data in science classroom, how does data get used in digital humanities, and the kinds of analysis you can do on GIS maps. As well. So I think we're going to see an infusion taking place, but there's also an interesting case to be made for mathematics to incorporate more data literacy activities and practices in the instruction. Actually, one of our colleagues over in the GSE had an op-ed piece in the LA Times with Stephen Levitt saying that what we should actually be looking at in high school mathematics is data science rather than teaching Algebra 2. A provocative suggestion.
Yeah, so everybody comes up with their new critical thing, like computational thinking, right, or statistics, or data literacy. And the first thing that they all say, get rid of?
Algebra 2?
No, it was geometry, analytic geometry.
Oh.
Guess what was number 2?
Calculus? I don't know.
Trig.
Oh.
Trig. Now we're going after Algebra 2.
Well, okay, but Victor said some interesting things. He said,
what about the past?
You're tisking this. But,
I'm not. I'm just... the battle for what's most important to be in the curriculum.
Yes. So as a teacher, you can't teach everything. I am anticipating a little bit of pushback from the math teachers to say, well, you need these things to get onto the next course and you'll need it in college. I'm anticipating a lot of that. I hear that all the time. What do you say to someone who says, well, they need the math. They need the basic math, maybe in addition to this, but I'm not willing to cut something out and the
right.
curriculum
you, you
is
You asked
already...
me to get rid of art so I could teach data literacy.
I asked you to get rid of art?
Well, you told me I had to give up something.
No, I didn't. I didn't say that. You're putting constraints on the exercise that weren't there. But it is something we hear all the time. If you're going to add it to the curriculum, what are you going to cut?
Well, I don't think we necessarily need to do cutting because some of these things are actually included in the standards documents. So there are introductions to data, but it's the question of how richly are we having students engage with those opportunities to do collaborative sense making and interpreting what these different data representations are or trying to invent their own data representations to show some of the patterns or trends that may be visible from different ways of showing it. For example, when we worked with our Fitbit project, we worked with fifth and sixth grade because that was where they're encountering measures of center. And that's pretty standard content. But we're changing it from let's not just learn the algorithm, let's try to situate these and what they mean and how does that look in your own activity data.
Okay, translation for the non-fifth grader, measures of center.
Measures of center being like the mean, median, mode.
Right, got it. I knew that. I was saying that for the audience.
That's the wrong response because now you're saying the audience doesn't know it.
Oh, so I'm being, okay. Yeah. Sorry, audience.
Let me push back a little bit on this. So the military tried to make smarter soldiers to handle complex machinery and technology, and they invested a lot in training. And then finally, they just decided, why don't we just make the machinery easier to use? So aren't the wizards in Silicon Valley going to make the technology so I can see the data so simply I don't have to have all these special skills?
Even when they're making it simply, there's still a lot of inference and interpretation that is involved in making sense of these new cool things that they're inventing for us. Infographics are an innovation in data representation, and they definitely make things more fun, but there's a lot of work that's involved in trying to find the meaningful information in an infographic. Besides that, there's so many new streams of data that are coming in where these new inventions are being generated that there's still going to be a lot to learn when we start seeing social media data and being able to analyze that. How do you represent that and how are we going to learn to represent and understand those?
And how do you not get manipulated? Right, you look at an infographic, how do you dig in and really not get manipulated?
Right, and actually source the data, see that it's trustworthy, that the patterns are actually indeed there.
Right. So much to hear, and we will hear more. This is Schools In with Denise Pope and Dan Schwartz. We will have more with Victor Lee talking about data literacy next on SiriusXM.
This is Schools In.
I'm not an expert at this. Okay. I'm more expert than you.
When you can't read in American society, you are really left out.
With Dan Schwartz and Denise Pope from the campus of Stanford University.
Welcome back to Schools In with Dan Schwartz and Denise Pope. We are talking with Victor Lee about data literacy and helping people understand the data sources that are coming to them, the data that's
right,
coming to
right.
them.
Right. So I think there's a lot of data that just wasn't there before.
Like what?
My wearables,
But how many wearables do you have?
It depends. If I feel like I'm going to exercise really hard, I'll wear lots of them.
But
if I feel like I'm not doing anything, I'll take them all off. So I sort of, you got to trust my source of data.
This is crazy. You're the ultimate consumer of wearables.
No. I look at my retirement account when the stock market's gone up, not when the stock market's gone down. So. But there's amazing sources, and it's so fast, it's real time. So Victor brought up GIS.
Yeah, what does that even mean?
It's spatial location. It's kind of your car's relying on it, mm-hmm. but I can, your cell phone, you've seen traffic laid out on Google Maps.
Yeah, I love it.
Right, it's because it's tracking your cell phones, where all the cell phones are collected and stuff.
Well, that's a good thing. So I like interpreting that data. But see, that's your example of making it easy for me because I don't have to know how it's done and I don't really feel manipulated. I just look for the red and try to avoid it. That's simple. I like that.
Right. So that's what I said about the military. Just make it easy to use.
Right.
So I don't know. What are some other sources of data that you two have run across which probably wouldn't have been available at least at the speed that we get it now?
Well, one of the examples that you talked about is with your wearables. We've studied adult athletes, marathon runners, cyclists, and they've been collecting lots of data. There's tools like Strava, where you can compete with one another and log the trails that you're running or the paths that you're riding on your bike. And so there's actually a lot of data collection that's happening there, and a lot of ways in which people make sense of how competent they are for their athletic activity with respect to those data. We've looked at families with children with type 1 diabetes, and so there's actually a lot of data being produced about how one's blood sugar is doing, how much nutritional intake.
How is that working? How do they collect that?
There's a few different strategies, and it largely depends on socioeconomic status. On the high end, you have continuous glucose monitors that you wear and have an implant in your skin, and so it will get continuous readings of how much sugar is in your blood and store those and generate reports that you can go over and see, are there any tendencies at certain times of day for your blood sugar to spike. And it will alert you when you're needing another dosage of insulin or when you're going to be needing to take on some more sugar.
That's and great.
Is the expectation that I, as the user, am interpreting this?
The expectation is the user should be doing some interpretation. What we found is that some families are so caught up in trying to keep up with the influx of data that they aren't necessarily sitting down and doing the routines of looking at it and developing that statistical or data literacy to interpret what's going on and analyze for trends and patterns.
There is such a thing as data overload, right? I mean, I would get very overwhelmed if you kept sending me – I mean, I don't even look at my – I don't have a Fitbit, but I don't even look to see how many miles I ran, right? There's enough coming at me all day.
So a student of mine started a company to create technology, a computer game for very young children to teach them social, emotional. And in the process, he discovered he could track them on 12 dimensions of social, emotional development. And he made a dashboard. And no parent wants it.
No, it's overwhelming.
Just, that's right. It's just telling me, is my kid good?
Right. Like, you know? I need to have them have their shoes on and have had lunch and get their homework done. Like, don't flood me with all this data.
On the flip side, there are situations where we're already flooding ourselves with data. So if you keep a balanced checkbook or look at your credit card expenses, you're tracking data right there. If you're, you know, keeping track of your sleep at all, or following some medical recommendations to log things, you're doing some data tracking. You could even argue that taking pictures with your cell phone is a form of data tracking as well, because you're logging things that are happening throughout your life, and that tags geolocation and what's been going on imagistically.
This is Schools In with Dan Schwartz and Denise Pope. We're speaking with Victor Lee about data collection and trying not to be overwhelmed by data. But something you said, Victor, about using the phones and taking pictures, right there you're going to get kids engaged. Because every parent knows that that is a thing. That is the thing right now. You take pictures with your phone. You want people to know where you are, how you look, you pose, the selfies. What's an idea there for data literacy?
Well, one of the things I've always been interested in and like to explore more in the future is kids working with social media data so they can actually see when are they using their social media, what are the patterns in terms of who are they sharing it out with, what's getting the most likes, what's not. And it's the same sorts of things that these Silicon Valley social media companies are doing themselves. And so this is a great preparation for thinking about how are your data being used, but you yourself being the analyst figuring it out.
Okay, I would fund that. I have no money, but I would fund that. That's great.
What, how many likes you have?
No, the kids will be totally into that. If you teach them how to curate and look at that as data, right, and then translate that and say, hey, you're data analysts.
And that goes back to this idea of personal relevance and something that the kids are interested in and expert in. They already know what's going on with social media, so they can situate what, you know, the spike in message sending or posts means and what it was they were doing and what that post was about. And that has a lot more meaning for them.
Is that going to – okay, so here's a little pushback question. Is all of that going to then translate to what they're going to need to know in life, in college? This is the pushback we usually
hear. What's more important than tracking your likes? That's the point.
That's the point of life.
That is
right
the point.
There, tracking your likes.
Well, let's think about what do we need to know with respect to data. On the one hand, we need an informed citizenry who can make good decisions based on what sorts of data are being produced by other organizations, reading poll numbers, reading figuring out is climate change actually happening by looking at the data. So we need an informed citizenry. On the other hand, we also are looking at developing a workforce. And so there's ways in which jobs of the future are changing to be very data intensive. And I'm not just talking about data scientists, but the kind kind of data analysis and data interpretation and communication with data that are required in all sorts of jobs, whether you're doing marketing or sales or management, nonprofit work. You're looking at and working with data and trying to figure out what are the patterns here, where are the spikes, what can we do to respond to this and be more data driven in our decision making. So, you know, I think that these kinds of activities are good practice for that. We want to bootstrap it by tapping into things the kids are already interested in, so that way they can see some point of connection for it and then further develop their competency in it.
How young do you want to start?
I know of projects that are working with first through third graders.
Like what?
Well, you can have them starting to create their own data plots by figuring out what sorts of things that the kids in the class like and making a data display about that.
Actually, right when I said that, I remember my kindergartner, they built block towers, and then they graphed who had the highest block tower.
Yeah.
That's
an early data activity, yeah, just making some comparisons and seeing what's typical for the classroom.
Then there was like mass chaos when they knocked down the highest one, and then that person started to cry, and they didn't capture it, and, you know, this is what it is with young kids. And I think the older people get, you know, these are digital natives down here, but the older people, this could be a scary thing, data analysis.
Yeah, and one of the things that we want to think about are ways in which to engage the whole population. So whether they're hobbyists and they're collecting data because they're an athlete, or they're going to their local library and learning things from a data workshop, or seeing data visualizations of civic services that's being posted up there, looking at where we can create opportunities for people to learn about data on their own or in whole different spaces besides schools.
So have you thought about introducing questions of data privacy?
Data privacy is a really important issue here, and I think there's a few considerations one has to make. I mean, what is it about data privacy that triggers us to respond in a certain way? One is a question of what can someone infer from the data that I share? And is that stuff that I want people to be able to infer? Another is the data being used for the purposes that I think it's going to be used? So it was a big upsetting thing to find out that data from Facebook went to Cambridge Analytica, because that wasn't what people thought they agreed to and how they thought their data were going to be used.
So have you thought about how to get this in a curriculum at all?
I think these are some important next steps in terms of getting people to understand what's happening to the data trails that they're leaving behind, mm-hmm. And what decisions that they make to make these accessible. Because the last consideration one wants to make with data is, what do I get in return for providing you my data? There's an exchange that's taking place with this resource, and is it worth it for how much I'm giving up for what I'm getting in return?
I could develop a great class around this, where kids are allowing certain data out, and then other kids are analyzing it, and then they're coming back and telling the kid what they discover.
And the kid's saying, you're invading my privacy.
Yeah, sort of like that. You make it somehow like a game like Clue, you know, where you're trying to figure out who did it, and I think it'd be interesting.
Well, when you do more, Victor, please come back. Thank you so much.
Or even if you don't do more,
even if you don't do more, you can come back. Thank you. Thank you for being here. And thank all of you for listening to Schools In with Dan Schwartz and Denise Pope. If you missed any of this episode, listen anytime on demand with the SiriusXM app, on iTunes, and on SoundCloud.
From the campus of Stanford University, this has been Schools In with Dan Schwartz and Denise Pope on SiriusXM Business Radio. If you missed any of it, listen on demand, online, or with the SiriusXM app.